You're listening to a 3CR podcast recorded in the 3CR Community Radio Studio in Melbourne, Australia. If you like what you hear, please consider donating or subscribing so we can keep bringing you more independent community content. For more information, go to 3cr.org.au.
City Limits, brought to us by the People's Committee for Melbourne every Wednesday at 9 a.m.
City Limits is Melbourne's only hour devoted to our urban environment.
To transport and planning and housing issues.
To privatisations and our utility services.
To building and or maintaining a sense of community. 855 on the AM band, if we can hear it through the noise and find it through the smog.
City Limits.
Good morning, listeners. You're here on City Limits on 3CR Community Radio. My name's Karina. I'm going to kick off on the ones and twos on the button pressing till Zeb gets in. And across from me, I've got Mr. Kevin Healy. Morning, Kevin. How you doing?
Morning, Karina. And I'm going all right, actually. I think, when I think of you, you asked me that earlier. I said, at my age, you've got to think about that, but I'm going all right. Yeah. And it is our transport day, so we're going to have our regular transport commentator, John McPherson, in or on the line today in the second half of the program. And before that, we'll just have some general chats about a number of things, but you're going okay there as well, I suppose, aren't you?
I suppose.
Yeah,
no.
Yeah, right.
It's all good. We were at a transport-related event on the weekend, weren't we, Kevin?
There was the rally. Yeah, I was going to raise that with John later, the issue of accessibility on public transport. There was a rally about that, and you played a couple of speeches from it, in fact, on the Monday Brekkie show, Karina, because I know you must have recorded the speeches. But
well, I actually didn't record it and I didn't play it because been out preparing for some of the Beyond the Bars broadcast for NAIDOC Week.
I was
out of the building, Kevin. Well, wheels just keep on turning when you're not around.
Fair enough. It's amazing, isn't it? I can't believe that. Do you want a cup of tea?
Yes, please. Okay. I would love a cup of tea.
We've got Vietnamese green tea today. You'll be pleased or not pleased to know. I'm not sure. One of the two. Do you want the plain
or
cup?
Or you'll just know.
Do you want the plain cup or the coloured cup?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
Okay, you have the coloured one.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, there you are.
Okay. Kevin called me bossy at the rally because I forced him to take a photo with Zeb and myself. So I'm not sure. Maybe we can do a little comparison and use it for the podcast image. One thing I did want to say to listeners as well was that we have got a listener survey online, and we've been popping little things in the e-news and all sorts of things for people who might be subscribed, not analog people like yourself, Kevin, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But I thought what better way of spruiking that than actually saying it on the air and getting some listeners to go and give us some of their thoughts. The original date was Monday, but I think we've extended it by a week or two. So if you want to help us improve, or if you want to send City Limits your like love or things about the station.
Or tell the truth
about the station more generally in our programming, just go to 3cr.org.au/survey.
Okay. That was that. And can I also think, I remember this morning I checked and we found that City Limits has reached our target, which was 2,000 something. I think I can't think what the actual figure was.
But we reached it.
Yeah. So we've. I want to thank everybody who gave to us and make sure you get the money in, of course. But thank everybody who thank everybody. I just said in the kitchen, our six listeners have come to the rescue. But anyway. We've got
six wealthy benefactors.
Yeah, that's right. So there we are. A couple of things to comment on this morning. There was a headline in yesterday's front page of the Financial Review, which I thought was quite interesting. It says, military chiefs kept miles in the dark. And I thought, well, why is that a headline? It wouldn't be too hard to do, I wouldn't have thought. I mean, I've never known you to be in the light when you think about it. So anyway, that's that poor old Richard. All he cares about is war and backing America to go to war on China. That's the big go.
I mean, the chiefs are bullying him.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of bullying, that's right.
Uh-oh.
you can't forget it, can you? Now, this is an interesting one, I think. Another story from yesterday, in the Fin Review, a senior public servant at Home Affairs who helped her sister's fiancé get a promotion while hiding their connection is the first person to have corruption finding made against them by the two-year-old federal watchdog. That's that institution set up, of course, by the former Attorney General, Mark Dreyfus, which is supposed to look at all sorts of government corruption, etc. What I found interesting about it was that this is a public servant, well, a senior it says, but a public servant. After 2 years, the only person who's been nailed by this is a public servant who got a job for her future brother-in-law. Now, given all that's gone on, and given the same judge, in fact, who runs the show, Brayton, was the one who did the commission of the inquiry that proved there had been war crimes in Afghanistan. Thus far, not one of those war criminals has been charged with anything. We know that the bloke who gave the information which allowed them to find out there had been war crimes is serving 5 years in jail for allegedly breaking our security laws. So he's gone to jail. None of the war criminals have. But also, this is the same Judge Brayton who said that in relation to the years of Morrison and Company with the Rorts deal, with people, what was it called again, the term for people who were hit with robo-debt tragedy for years. This is the same judge who said, despite the fact that a number of senior ministers of that government and senior public servants were allegedly involved, said there's no case to answer and that he wouldn't hold an inquiry. Now, subsequently, due to backlash on that, they're saying they will have a look at that and have an inquiry. But nonetheless, I would have thought that the people involved for all the tragedy that occurred in that deal, the robo debt, and killing and war criminals in Afghanistan, is somewhat more important than a public servant getting a job for her brother-in-law. And yet, that's the only one that's turned up. And the woman has lost her job, by the way. But she had already resigned. Yeah. But I presume she resigned because she saw what was going to come.
The old Home Affairs. Riddle me this, Judge Brayton. Yeah, I'm not sure, Kevin. I'm not a judge.
No, you're not.
Neither are you, but you sure do have your finger on the pulse.
I have my finger. Yeah, well, you can see it. No, that's your finger there.
It's all smudged anyway.
You're holding it up now.
Newspaper cut.
Now, also, we mentioned some time ago that the government was considering looking at family trusts. Now, a lot of people like us, innocent, silly people like us, consider that family trusts are often used by their ultra wealthy to avoid taxes.
Did you just say you were innocent?
And to pass them on, etc., to the family. Now, the government said that it was some time ago when they first mooted it, a number of the filthy rich and their tax lawyers, etc., said that this could threaten financial ruin for the country if they attack family trusts, for God's sake. But it's even worse because last week they came up with it and he said, well, maybe he will. And one of the leading tax lawyers in this country said all it would do, it was terrible, because it would see that the rich would flee the country with their wealth. And we'd lose all those people. So it's pretty serious, isn't it? And we just hope the government doesn't go ahead because we thought they were using it for tax purposes, but in fact it's designed to keep wealth and initiative and good people in Australia. That's what it's all about. I knew you'd be thrilled with that.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
Yep. But not making a lot of sense, and I think this is absolutely unbelievable cruelty, in my opinion. In Australia, if you get convicted for murder, you generally get about 20 years with, say, a 15 or 16-year non-parole period. And so after about 15 or 16 years, they usually let you out on parole.
Are you talking about an 8-year parole period,
I'm talking about a 16-year. Usually, the general thing around murder is roughly 20 with a 15 or 16 in Australia.
Mm.
Some more heinous murders get longer, and 30 or something. But that's sort of the general rule. Now, in the United States, it's unbelievable. They executed two blokes last week, one in Florida, who was convicted. He was sentenced to death in 1995 for a murder. Let's not carry on about what they did, because I think it's irrelevant in a sense. He's been on death row, therefore, for 30 years.
30 years.
Before they actually executed him. I mean, and that in Australia, he would have been out in 15 years ago, back on the street. A 79-year-old bloke who was sentenced to death in 1976, 49 years ago, was executed last week in America. And he's been on death row for 79-year-old. That to me is the ultimate in cruelty, when in fact, in other jurisdictions, they would have served 15 or 20 years and got out. They've actually done the time, absolutely, beyond the time, and yet they've then been executed at the end of it.
One of the cruelest things that that I think about with capital punishment is the method by which people are executed.
Yeah.
Because it's been really given a kind of brush on the outside of kind of medical, but there's nothing actually medical about it. It's just kind of sanitizing it for the viewer. But actually, some of the ways that we use now are actually crueler and more painful and more likely to be botched. But I also wonder about that waiting period. I mean, is death row for 49 years like every day could be your day? And then by the time it's not, it's like, oh, you got another day
for
49 years?
That's basically it. I think, they set a date ahead, but I mean, there probably were a few appeals and things in that time, but for God's sake, I mean, that's just absolutely over the top.
Mm.
Another story out of America, but this is a story, a person who'll never go to death row because he's a wonderful, wonderful person. That is Jared Kushner, who's Donald's son-in-law, of course. Jared last time round was the Middle East bloke who wanted it, and he's the bloke who first alerted Donald to the real estate possibilities of Gaza, as long as you get the people out of the way, which they're doing their best to do. Now, here's Zeb. Look, you said 2 minutes. It's now 13 past. I mean, this is just...
That's monkey maths.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? Ridiculous.
I'm going to pop a little announcement on while we swap over to Zeb. And the last thing I suppose I'll say before running away from City Limits for the week is I don't like it when you say America.
Okay.
Because in Spanish, that also includes Latin America and the continent of South America.
Okay, yes. USA. The US of A.
The US. Thank
okay.
you.
Okay, yeah, we'll come back to Jared Kushner and his problems after Zeb settles in. And by the way, gives us an excuse. We need an excuse for this.
We want to hear it.
Yeah, that's right.
Inquiring exactly. minds want to know.
Exactly.
You're on City Limits on 3CR.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
Okay, Zeb. Zeb, what is the... I mean, there's got to be... This is ridiculous. It's got to be an excuse. 15 past now.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I lost my wallet this morning. I still haven't found it, but I spent far too long trying to find it. And then that's why I ran late.
Oh, I do feel sorry for you, because when you lose that sort of thing, it's a disaster, isn't it?
I know.
Okay.
I feel very silly.
Yeah, you're half, at least half forgiven. It's the point we're going to give you a cup of tea very shortly. So,
yay.
Yeah, there you are. I was getting onto a story about Jared Kushner, who's one of those lovely people. He's Donald's son-in-law, of course, and he's, as I just said, there we are. You do want a cup of tea, I presume, do you?
Yes, please. I would love that.
You've got a Barkindji Dreamtime cup today, too. That's
great.
Very nice, isn't it? There we are. That's your cup of tea. It's about half a cup
Thank
there.
You.
I perhaps I should have put more water in the pot. Anyway, we'll see. I'll just drain the rest into my cup before I go on. Now, Jared was the bloke who, as I said before you came in, was the bloke who first alerted Donald to the real estate possibilities of Gaza, as long as you get the people out of the way. And the fact is they're doing their utmost, of course, to get the people out of the way. But he's now run into a bit of trouble. He's over in Belgrade, and there's a heritage area that resulted from the war. It was badly damaged in the Kosovo War, this area of Belgrade, but it's received heritage protection. But Jared's come up with this wonderful idea to tear it down, and he wants to build this brilliant real estate development there. And he, you know, it should be great too. It obviously he wants to raise the whole area and put a large real estate project in this area. And it he's won over, of course, the very right wing president of Serbia, Aleksandar Vučić, has supported him all the way. And in fact, they moved in government just to allow Jared to go ahead, that the heritage listing be lifted off this area. But unfortunately, thousands and thousands of the people don't seem to want it to go ahead for old Jared's show. And it's currently at the stage where will it or won't it, it's it's touch and go. But here's Jared moving in and just deciding tear down this thing, gets the government to lift another right-wing government to lift the heritage preservation, and then go ahead with this massive real estate development, which the vast majority of the people and the vast majority of the parliament apparently don't want. But we'll wait and see, keep our eye on it. But there's Jared and his latest little development.
Right. Well, fingers crossed for him, I suppose.
Oh, yes. We can only hope that he gets his way. And, of course, back in the US of A as well, last week this bloke won the Democrat vote to run as mayor of New York, which is quite dreadful. This bloke, Zoran Mamdani, who he's only 33, but he calls himself a democratic socialist, and he knocked off the very rich current mayor, or the mayor called Cuomo, his name is that bloke, for the democratic thing. Cuomo's going to run anyway against him as an independent, and there's a couple of others, etc., going on. But of course, Cuomo is the big money man who also had to leave last time because of the odd allegation about sexual impropriety, if you might recall. But anyway, this bloke has got up, but he doesn't sound good because he was described, and this is as a radical lefty, but also a 100% communist lunatic. Now, can you take a stab at who might have said that? A 100%.
Someone that doesn't give like you a clue. Him, I would say.
A 100% communist lunatic, the biggest communist lunatic ever, ever.
That's not a bad impression. Yeah.
Who do you think?
Oh, Donald.
Got it right. Yes, spot on. Wow, you're clever at these things, aren't you? Yes, Donald called him a 100% communist lunatic.
Well, like, that's a great endorsement.
Yes, so we hope he gets up. My word, yes. The other thing, another one this week that really has been interesting is the coverage of the government giving a voice to Indigenous people here in Victoria. And you won't be surprised to know that the Herald Sun is not pleased with this. This is terrible. Covert voice. Exclusive taxpayer-funded Vic Indigenous Assembly to become permanent, but government won't reveal its powers. Covert voice. And then inside, a couple of pages about this again and how terrible it is.
If only they were offended by actual covert voices of lobbyists who are trying to get their businesses.
Like Rupert Murdoch.
Yeah, actually. I guess I see the problem there. I see the problem.
Yeah, right, okay. And then yesterday they had a story, Libs will axe any Vic voice, and the Libs say, you know, this is terrible because it's against what the people voted for in the referendum. It's shocking, et cetera, et cetera. They're going to get rid of it as soon as they're elected, and the usual crap in the stories. And in the Financial Review, a bloke called Daniel Wilde, headline, Why Welcome to Country is a Break on Economic Reform, and he goes on about the whole thing, backing up the Darebin City Council bloke who got sacked and then reinstated. This is a bloke called Sean Turner who objected to a Welcome to Country at his work site and was sacked for it, but the court last week reinstated him, saying he shouldn't be sacked for that. But now all the right-wingers are coming out supporting him totally, and he's now a new hero of the right. And, of course, Daniel Wilde, just to explain it, is Director of Research at the Institute of Public Affairs. What do you know? They've come out. But the same day as they had that front-page headline, Covert Voice, you turn to the next page, and there was a photo of Sean. Sean speaks out after win, and they're praising him. The Herald Sun says, "What a wonderful, you know, how wonderful it was that this man fought for his rights against these terrible people who want to have a Welcome to Country at their work site." He worked for Darebin Council, by the way. And he said, of course the country's becoming too political, and said, if you're a pale-stale male, you can't go to work now and have a laugh. It's terrible, isn't it? And so everything's just too politically pure, apparently, for poor old Sean and the Herald Sun and the Institute of Public Affairs.
I'm amazed that you can read the Herald Sun and not just bang your head on the table until you...
See that bruise on my forehead there? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, actually.
Well, there you are, you see. Now... Also, some time ago, the health insurance industry whacked up its premiums by 18%. Now, we've said many times we don't believe we even should have a health insurance industry because the free health service should be free health service. And people pay a levy on their wages to provide a universal free health care. And we've said many times, if the 2%, which it was I think it was 1 and it went up to 2, but whatever it now is, whatever percentage it is, if the percentage isn't making us able to provide universal free health care, then let's increase the levy to a level where we can provide universal free health care. And so much of the public health funds, of course, go into subsidising people on their private health insurance. So that should be dropped altogether. And if private health insurance wants to go on and exist in its own without government help, good luck to it. But bad luck, you know, it's laissez-faire capitalism. Do what you can, and if you can't, bad luck. Out you go. But also, there in the last week, Bupa, which advertises itself as absolutely responsible and loves helping people when they're ill, has been sued for $35 million for misleading customers and knocking back what were genuine claims and saying they didn't have a right to that claim. And they're now being forced to reimburse again lots of people over and above the $35 million fine. Well, they've agreed with the authority, the competition regulator, to pay a $35 million fine, which means they probably should have paid a lot more, but they've done a deal. But they also have to, over and above that, repay millions to people who they ripped off, which I find interesting because at the same time this week, the Health Minister, Mark Butler, has not gone ahead with a plan to intervene between the problems they're facing. The health insurance and the private hospitals are also in dispute because the private hospitals say the health insurance aren't giving them enough either. And so they're running out of money and the government might have to come to the rescue again from our public health funds. But the minister has said he won't intervene and he's going to leave it as it is. So again, they've been let off the hook on that one. So isn't that good? You look pretty thrilled.
Mm, very thrilled and also with a huge mouthful of tea, but
And we went to the rally last Saturday with people. We'll raise this with John, the rally about accessibility on public transport. But Optus, the headline in there, it's interesting when if someone they don't like gets fined, they get fined, they're terrible. But when Optus was fined $100 million for ripping off customers, including a lot of disabled people and Indigenous people, the Herald Sun headline is Optus slugged $100 million. Slugged, you know, that's terrible that they should get fined just because they ripped off a few disabled people and people with Indigenous people and just other general customers overall. That they were slugged. And in fact, Optus, interesting story, this Optus began as a rival to Telstra, because originally Telstra was Telecom and publicly owned, and then it was privatised, of course, by governments, going back into Hawke, Keating and Howard eras. And in that period, before technology took over much more strongly, a lot of the round the world television, etc., was done through satellites, totally through satellites. And Kerry Packer convinced the government, Labor government at the time, with John Button as minister, to put this satellite up. Now, I was advising one of the ministers at the time, and we opposed this strongly. But for Kerry Packer, they spent millions of dollars putting this satellite in the air so he could use it for his international television network. And by the time the government spent the money and put it in the air, technology had advanced to the point where Kerry Packer didn't need it anymore. And they were stuck with this white elephant in the sky. But then when Optus came along as a private company set up to take on Telecom, the new privatised Telstra, the government virtually gave them the satellite as a starting point to get themselves going. So effectively, they began again with massive government generosity, using this satellite that went up for Kerry Packer, and he didn't want any more, so Kerry just wasted all that money, public money, but what the hell? He didn't pay tax anyway, so what did it matter?
Yeah.
That just came into my mind when I looked at the headline. I wasn't going to say that on air, but I just thought it's worth telling that story.
That's really interesting. It's so funny how governments do these things and waste money, but then at the same time they're like, oh, we have to cut this vital thing that everyone needs.
And we can't afford to make public transport accessible.
No.
Let's take a break. We'll come back to that and get John McPherson on the line and talk public transport. Or transport generally.
3CR, stay tuned, stay radical.
We demand the full restoration of all Indigenous lands and resources, and we demand the immediate cessation of all forms of exploitation and destruction of our lands.
We're here to remind you of our sovereignty and our original demand from day one.
It started with intentional genocide of our people around the round table in England. It's all lies here. Everything's a lie. It's a great opportunity right now to step into a sovereign, independent republic.
We demand a treaty. We demand our land back. We demand to stop Black Death in custody.
Okay, on the line we've got John McPherson, our regular commentator on transport issues generally. John, you weren't well last month. You missed out, in fact. Are you okay?
Yeah, thanks. I'm much better, thanks, Kevin. Yeah,
good. We've got one item I did raise last month, which I might want to comment on it. We did say that the government was suddenly getting into yes minister territory because It said a couple of the stations on the Metro Tunnel, that's the one that goes out of the city mostly, around and the Parkville Station, Arden Station, the Library Station, etc. A couple of those stations weren't going to be ready, they thought, by the time they wanted to open later this year. So they're going to run the trains but bypass the stations, which we thought was a great scheme, which vied with some of the episodes of Yes Minister. But it's pretty smart, isn't it, to run a train service but just bypass the stations?
Well, it's a bit like, you know, hospitals would run beautifully if there weren't any patients.
That's right. That was the one. Yeah. That was the
To muck up the the way things operate. Well, they'd be the two stations there. They think might not open on opening day are the station at Town Hall, which is also part of Flinders Street Station. They're all connected now, or will be connected when everything's finished. And then the other one is up at the State Library, which will be connected through to Melbourne Central. And, of course, they're the two stations that are right in the CBD. So it might be that the trains will go cruising through the new metro tunnel line under the city and go slowly through those stations without actually stopping.
Although this week Jacinda Allen has said that they will open this year and all stations will be opened. That's her latest comment, so we'll see what happens.
No wonder did she have her fingers crossed behind her back. I don't know.
Just watching the shots on telly of trains going through it in test runs, have they got a new set of trains for these stations, John?
They have. The new trains are running already on the line that will be connected through the Metro Tunnel. They're already running, and they are quite a good big step up from the trains normal trains that are running elsewhere. However, this is the weird part, I think, the new super trains have been bought for this new line, but they're also still buying the older, less fancy trains for the other lines. So the other lines aren't going to get the boost in passenger comfort that the new trains offer. And I think that's really bizarre. You start improving the trains right across the network. You just don't bring in fancy trains for one new line and then ignore all the rest and keep producing older trains for the other line. So
which lines will the will the Metro Tunnel serve?
Well, apparently it will serve the Dandenong line, and of course Dandenong is a line that goes south to
Pakenham and Cranbourne.
Out to Pakenham and go south to Cranbourne. That's right. That'll be the lines from the southeast, and then going out to the northwest, there'll be the Sunbury line, and we're not quite sure about where the other ones will go. Because they haven't built the more electrification out that way. The logical place to take it would also be to Melton, and possibly to Tarneed and Wyndham Vale. But those lines, of course, haven't got round to electrifying them.
Are these new train sets longer than the current ones?
I think they are. Yes.
Will they fit into the platforms once they get away from the Metro Tunnel then?
Well, that's a good question. I think they're actually lengthening platforms as we speak to make that work.
Ah, right.
But these trains are really quite a big step up in terms of comfort, which is nice. But again, as I said, the fact that they're not all the new trains, for other lines that have been built, are not this modern upgraded standard. It bewilders me, I must say, but a lot of the decisions bewilder me about these projects. Another part of it is, how we're sold a project. It's going to be wonderful. And then 5 years later, when they're finally finishing the project, they say, oh, by the way, we couldn't afford this bit, we couldn't afford that bit. And so you end up with a scaled-down project. But they don't, of course, announce that openly while it's going on or when the decisions are made. It isn't until you know, the end that they actually say, oh, sorry, we couldn't afford this bit and we couldn't afford this that bit. But often it's the bits they can't afford that made the project worthwhile. Ah, but that's becoming a standard. That's becoming a standard pattern. It's, you know.
So who, if you're in this, we've already got the loop around the city. So what benefit will people get from this extra metro tunnel going down there?
Well, we're told that because this tunnel's going to run north-south across the middle of the loop, if you like. It's going to mean that people will be able to get... Well, they won't be any closer to where they are now, but a lot of people will be able to get to these new stations, which are, you know, very central in the CBD, and they may save time by taking the metro tunnel trains. But unless they're on the lines that this thing connects to directly, of course, they'll have to do an interchange somewhere to get onto it.
Mm.
And that'll be somewhere like Footscray or Caulfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
Footscray's had a pretty decent upgrade in the last few years, well, a bit of an upgrade. There's to be quite a lot of walking and up and down and over to get to the right platform.
Well, there already is it, but what's great, you've got to go right out, almost out of the station to get back to platform one these days. It's,
that's the sort of thing. There, the interchanges aren't as nearly as direct as they could be because they haven't bothered to think through the final issues of interchange. And they're the sort of things they've ignored. And they've done something similar at Caulfield. You have to virtually walk out onto the footpath to interchange at Caulfield too.
Well, they say they'll be very frequent.
Well, that's good.
Wait and see. We'll see. But
again, you know, they say these things, but then when it happens, no, they're not frequent. They say, oh, we can save a few dollars in operational costs if we bring the trains every 10 minutes rather than 5 minutes.
Well, it hasn't been resolved yet because Jacinta said the timetable is a really complex piece of work because not only are we opening twin 9-kilometre underground stations but also 5 new stations. We've got to plug that into our existing ground fields network. We've got to plug the new trains, the new tunnel and the new signalling into the existing train network, and that's a big complex task. So that's a bit up in the air at the moment, I would have thought.
Well, can I say that Jacinta's all getting on a high horse and saying, well, we've now got to work out the timetable after having built this thing. Can I break it to her gently that with public transport projects, you work out what trains you want to run first, and then you build the necessary infrastructure to run them. You do not conjure infrastructure out of thin air and then work out what timetable you can squeeze in. You do it the other way around.
Yeah, it's probably a touch late for that, John.
Well, it's a touch late, and it's always a touch late because all these projects, the ones, you know, that have happened over, say, the last 20 or 30 years, they've all been built the wrong way around. They've been built on the basis that we'll summon out of the air what we think we'd like to build, and then we'll work out what services we can put through the new bit of infrastructure. It's just completely the wrong way around. Can I mention the Swiss? The Swiss, those marvels of operating a rail system, about the only ones in the world who seem to be able to do it. They start with looking at the trains they want to run, and then they build the infrastructure they need to run them. And I'm afraid that's the way you start. But no, here in Melbourne, we do it completely the other way around. And it means you end up trying to work out what you can run on the infrastructure you built. And that is not the way to go.
Well, you mentioned also the fact that they always have to cut because they find they haven't got enough money for the overall thing they went for. But just yet again... the Westgate Tunnel, which of course is a road project.
Yeah.
The Westgate Tunnel has yet again gone overboard. It's about the third or fourth time they've said, gee, costs are blown out.
Yeah.
Incredibly, and of course the situation there is that this was a proposal put forward by Transurban in the interests of Transurban, which a government picked up and adopted. It wasn't a government project that was put to them by Transurban, and they picked it up. Now, Transurban and the contractor, which is Holland, are supposed to be meeting all the costs, and if they can't meet all the costs based on their original tender, etc., well, bad luck. But so far, the government keeps coming up with money to help them out. In the latest blowout, interesting comment in the article, under the complicated web of Westgate Tunnel contracts, cost claims made by the builder against Transurban can trigger a, quote, linked claim against the state. So we've actually signed a contract with Transurban in which, if it blows over, we become responsible for some of the costs. I mean, that seems to me to be an extraordinary contract to sign.
Yep, well, I can only agree, Kevin. And, of course, when they go looking for money in the transport budget to cover this issue, of course, you know, often it's the rail side of things that gets slashed in order to find the money. That's very normal. It's happened in the past. It happened 15 years ago when they were doing work in the West. You know, the work that ended up with the line down to Windham Vale, Tarneed, and then connecting to the Geelong line.
Mm.
Money was cut out of that project, which reduced the junction at Sunshine to less than satisfactory. And of course, that's now a place where they're going to have to spend a huge pile of new money because they know now it won't work. It doesn't work. But of course, you know, road is always more important than rail in the government's in the government's way of assessing things. So, yeah.
Can I ask, if every project that they do goes over budget, then surely they could anticipate that they need to start with a bigger budget?
Oh, Zeb, you're so young and naive. You've got to pretend that you know what you're doing for as long as possible.
Okay.
Then it comes to a point where you can't pretend any longer, and then you reluctantly, you know, edge your way out onto this stage at the, you know, the press conference and admit it's all gone sideways. You know.
Don't feel bad, by the way, Zeb, because last night on the phone talking to John about what we're going to talk about today, on accessible public transport, I threw up a couple of ideas how we could get the money to pay for it, and John called me old and naive, so don't feel bad.
Okay.
Well, it's I'm afraid we're really in yes minister territory. You know, we always are in yes minister territory, really.
You would think that something like making accessible tram stops would be so much more achievable.
Yeah, you would, and it's been supposedly the top of the agenda for about 15 years.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to that then. I was going to track, but we'll go to it now. We raised it.
Okay.
Now, the government says it would cost $2 billion, and they're doing it slowly, slowly. They're bringing in some new called G-Class trams, they say, will help. They'll all be accessible.
Yeah.
An article recently in The Age said that there are six routes now operate entirely with accessible trams, but it doesn't say they're fully accessible because whether there's that many stops, we don't know. It doesn't say that.
Yeah.
But we know there's a number of routes like the Paran-Chapel Street one that has no accessible stops at all. So people with disabilities can't use that at all. Mm. But the $2 billion, now I did say to you that, you know, that the 7 or 8 level crossing removals they're talking about on the upfield line, that money would pay... for, this is where you told me I was naive, what the money would pay for the accessibility.
Yeah.
And you could also, in fact, duplicate the line up north so you get a faster service as well,
and
upgrade the bike lanes as well. But certainly, the money is there if the government had the will.
And I've often commented that I'm not sure that, you know, doing quite as many level crossing eliminations as they want to do is the best use of the public transport pie, because it is the motorists who get most of the benefits out of the level crossing removals. And we may be going too far with level crossing removals. You know, there are ways to upgrade level crossings to make them a bit safer, which they just don't seem to want to look at, which is putting in barriers on all four sides of the level crossing, not just two sides, if you know what I mean, that the barrier's coming down.
Mm.
Ah, dear. Yeah, so the government's on a winner, it reckons, with level crossing removal, so they're going to absolutely keep that one going as long as they can. But that means that people who are very reliant on public transport, that is, people with disabilities, get less of a benefit. And of course, the thing about improving the trams and the stops for people with disabilities means that it improves it for everybody. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you get level access and all those things, which is good for everybody.
And
including us oldies, Kev.
Indeed, John. In this case, though, it was a electoral bribe to try and wrest the seat back from the Greens in the last state election.
Yeah.
And they might say, well, we promised this and we've got a mandate, but I think the mandate is questionable because the electorate it was aimed at, in fact, voted more strongly against them than the previous time. The Greens won by more. So you could argue that in the area affected, they haven't got a mandate to do it anyway.
Well, you know, those sort of things like mandates, you can twist them any way you like, of course.
Can they what?
Do. It's astounding that the platform stop issue has rumbled on for at least 15 years, and a little bit is done year by year, reluctantly it would seem. Well, it's scandalous, like a lot of other things. It's scandalous.
Well, I mean, the article in a couple of weeks ago in The Age opens, two stops on Melbourne's vast tram network will be rebuilt to be more accessible over the next year. I mean, it's certainly slowly. And as you said last week, I interviewed Emilio, one of the people in a wheelchair who was there on Saturday, that I think it's a moral obligation. I mean, you can't have a public transport system called public if there's sectors of the public who can't get on the bloody thing.
That's right. Yeah, it's. I think it's hang your head in shame time for the government. I mean, you know, our current Labor government's been in power most of the last 15 years. You know, Labor at least used to pretend that it cared about, you know, people with disabilities and the poor and all those sort of things. But, gee, it's looking a bit thin these days.
Looking absolutely wretched.
I could go on to say this really leads into where my critique of the Metro Loop, you know, the wonderful loop line they want to build, that they're starting to build in the southeast, and that eventually in 20 or 30 or 40 years' time will go right round the city, they say. Again, there are so many things on the present network, public transport, which are done badly, which haven't been finished, which are still staggering along on 50-year-old infrastructure, that they're the sort of things I would say fix them now before you start on another blue sky project.
Big build mega project.
Big build. Yes. All I think of when I hear big build is, oh no, more disruption.
And more wasted money.
Not certainly not spent with the best value of value in mind. The view of the age is that the metropolitan loop thing could still be stopped up to the time at which a new big tunnel boring machine arrives later this year. But after work started with that grinding a hole from somewhere near Cheltenham through to Box Hill, it's all over. They're going to continue with the thing. This government seems determined that it's going to build the thing. But, there are so many bits of the system that are not in good repair, don't work well, need to be fixed. But things stagger along without everything work. I mean, the only way to make this new network with its automated trains, which is going to be the new line under the city, the new CBD tunnel, north-south under the city, that's going to run with automated signalling, and the trains will run semi-automatically. There may be a driver in the cab, but he or she will be doing nothing more than just supervising the way the train runs. And that is the best way to run trains. You can run them closer together that way and run them more, on time, right to the second. And that's good.
Unless something goes wrong, of course.
Until something goes wrong, yeah. But at least there will be a human who can maybe take control in the cab. But that, of course, by having staff on the train, you're doing away with some of the benefits, which is not to have to pay for staff on the train. Oh, dear. Mm. Yeah. And those trains will only be able to run, those special trains that they're building for that line will only be able to run on that line. But the other trains won't, because they won't have the automatic signalling that makes them, compatible with that line. So, there are likely to be lots and lots of issues integrating the whole thing. And one of the things about having the automatic train operation is that you can run trains very close together, and you can get more trains per hour through the tunnel. But it's not clear to me that they're going to run the trains that frequently. And if they're not running the trains that frequently, why do they need the huge extra cost of the automation? They don't. But it's like belt and braces. They're going to protect themselves by having the automatic operation. And of course, if the automatic operation doesn't work, they'll have somebody to blame. It wasn't us, Governor. It was the suppliers of the automatic equipment that got it wrong. Ah, dear. So, I mean, there's still a whole issue, too, of the patronage after COVID. I mean, the patronage is still... the last thing I saw suggested patronage stopped rising again after COVID. That the trains weren't as busy as they would have been expected to be, 2 years after COVID's over. And if the trains aren't going to be that busy, again, do we need all this automation so they can run more trains? Question mark.
Question mark, yeah. Question mark.
Although given we argue that frequency is the key to it, I guess if they are more frequently spread, it might get people on them.
Yeah, most people on a suburban line would think a train would say every 5 minutes in peak hour would be pretty damn good.
Yeah.
Most people can manage to wait 5 minutes playing with their phone until the next train turns up.
We think 14 minutes, I feel, would be better than 20, 15 or something. Yeah, that's right. So that's
good. Yeah, good old upfield, yep. Yeah. Yep. Well, that's right. I mean, Yes.
John, we might come back to this next item next month when we have more detail.
Yeah, okay.
But there's an article in a local rag which didn't have a lot of detail, but it says there are to be 470 more weekly bus trips in the west on four major routes.
Yeah.
Better connection to train services are promised at Werribee, Tarneed and Wyndham Vale. The buses going to some number of shopping centres, linking Rockbank to Tarneet. Werribee South, some Key Lee Estate will be connected to the bus network for the first time. Services increased to the new Wyndham Law Courts and Employment Precincts, part of the Victoria Bus Plan. But do you know much about this?
Not really in detail, but, you know, 470 buses extra a week, was that what
was
said?
That's what it says.
Right, OK. Well, you see, you can count...
Bus trips. I mean, that's bus not buses, trips. Well, of course. That means
there are 400, 200 and something services. If you count an up and down trip, there's two trips. 7 days, divide by seven. So 275 divide by seven, or maybe even six. That's divide by six. So, you know, so that's really what you're getting. You're getting maybe, you know, 50 new services, really, is what you're getting. Because they count everything as, they double count, triple count, whatever, you know. So it doesn't sound nearly as fantastic when you talk about it in an obvious way, you know. Which is you don't count each day as a new trip, because presumably the trips are running every 5 days or 6 days per week, maybe even seven, if you're really lucky.
Mm, you've got to be lucky.
Let's face it, we've been a seven-day-a-week city for a long time, you know, in terms of going out to shop and going out to do all sorts of things. Sunday used to be very, very quiet, but not anymore. But the public transport has never been brought up to, you know, the same level on Sunday as it is on other days of the week.
Yeah, we'll check. But it says bus routes 170, the name's four of them, I don't know where they go.
Right.
We'll have more trips and longer operating hours from July 1, which is yesterday, with services running later into the evening most days of the week. Well, it probably means they go to 8 o'clock now or something.
Well, maybe they go to 8 o'clock rather than 7 o'clock.
Yeah,
well, you know, I would start to be impressed if they ran to 10 o'clock,
Yeah, we'll try and get more detail. I did ring Elise Cunningham, the city's person at Friends of the Earth yesterday, to see what she knew about it, because she's been working on buses, but working on this issue.
Yeah.
And she didn't know any more detail either, so we'll try and track it down.
You know, it won't look nearly as impressive when you actually break it down. In a reasonable way.
Okay,
we'll
try and do a breakdown next month, John, because time's
up this month. That'd be good. But, you know, every outer part of Melbourne has, you know, sad and sorry bus services, you could say, really. You know, I know that sounds sweeping, but, you know, it's sad and sorry, and really the government never catches up to what's needed.
No, and on that cheery note, we'll follow it up next month.
Okay.
John, thanks for your time again.
Okay. See you, folks.
Thanks, John.
John McPherson there, our regular commentator on transport generally. And Zeb, thanks for helping out again this morning.
Thank you, Kevin, and sorry for being late. Hopefully next fortnight
you find your wallet.
I'll be back with my wallet.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia.